The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 15, 2003. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
This morning I want to talk about something very subtle, and it's not easy to talk about. I feel that, and maybe you do too, that right now it's like the whole world is on eggshells. The whole world is anxious. You know, why is that? And of course, I think, you know, we all know why, if we have that sense. And I want to say something about that, but what I have to say is not easy to talk about. In fact, I can't talk about it directly, because it isn't a particular thing that needs to be pointed out. But maybe I can just tell a couple of stories that might illustrate what it is that I want to get at. Again, there's a subtlety in this. I'll tell you that up front, so you won't just grab the first thing that comes to mind. But I remember many years ago now, at least 20, probably more than 20 years ago now, when I was studying with Katagiri Roshi at the Minnesota Zen Center, some landscaping had been going on there, and one of the members happened to be a landscape architect. It's kind of nice when you have this built-in talent and skill. And so this person had done quite a bit to kind of arrange the layout of the yard. But at this one point, he planted a tree. I believe it was a maple tree. And he strategically placed it. He gave a lot of thought to this. And he was an artist. He was a very skilled landscape artist, architect. So this wasn't haphazard or willy-nilly. He very deliberately placed this tree in this particular spot by the path. But it was placed in such a way that there was a branch that went across the path. Now, I'm just a little over 6 feet. I used to say I was a hair over 6 feet, but then I lost my hair. I'm getting a little short. I think I'm still over 6 feet, though I haven't. But I was right about there, you know. But anyway, and that branch was, if I remember right, it was right around here for me. I didn't clear it. Shorter people could clear it, but even so, it's right over your head. And those of us who were a little bit taller, and we had to duck to walk that path. He deliberately put that tree there like that because, first of all, he was a Zen student. He knew something about this practice of ours where we slow ourselves down. We deliberately, it was like in Japan, you know, I wouldn't dare do it here because it might cause trouble, but in the meditation halls, you go to the monastery in Japan, in the meditation hall, and you step into the hall, you can't just walk in like we do here. You have a sill about 6 inches high. So it slows you down, so you make a very conscious act to step over that sill into the room. Well, here he had put this tree on the path where it either directly blocked you if you were of a certain height, or it certainly was very noticeable right over your head. Well, I remember the first time I encountered it, kind of surprised to see it there. I didn't realize at the time that it was deliberately placed there, but I certainly left it alone. I didn't do anything, but it wasn't too long after that, at a work period, probably a Sesshin work period or something like that, but somebody was out, you know, a lot of people were probably out working in the yard or doing different things around the center. And somebody sawed that branch off because it was Well, an inconvenience there. I mean, you always had the duck. And why would anybody put a tree here like that? And, of course, that's understandable. I mean, like I said, when I first came up the walk after that tree had been planted, I was kind of startled to see it, you know. And I'm sure it puzzled a lot of people. A number of us had to duck every time, you know, you walk up that path. And I think the person who cut the branch off didn't, it wasn't through maliciousness, not knowing why it was there. I didn't know either why at that time, why the tree had been placed that way. So I don't know, maybe some lack of communication in the community. So the word didn't get out about that tree. Can't really blame it on that. Can't really blame it on anything, including the person who sawed it off and why they sawed it off, or the person who designed it that way. It was just set up this way, and then didn't take very long before it was changed. And of course, once that branch was sawn off the tree like that, there was no way we were going to put it back on. I suppose maybe right away you could have re-spliced it, but I think by the time anybody realized what had happened, that opportunity was gone. Even if we did put it back on, it probably would get sawed off again, you know. So there's a subtlety in this situation, it seems to me. There's a kind of a feeling that is there, you know, this matter of slowing yourself down. You walk a path in nature, maybe one that isn't constantly being trimmed and the brush pulled back, but you're walking in nature, and we're always just going through branches and things. It's not an unusual thing. It's pretty natural for that to happen. And I know, too, like when I'm out, you know, hiking in the woods or whatever, you know, we slow down. At least I slow down, and it's wonderful to slow down. You hear the birds and water lapping maybe somewhere, and you appreciate any of the branches that come by, or the stones, the unevenness of the path. You have to be careful and watch all that, but take it all in. And of course, while you're doing that, then maybe you can forget yourself and your own petty concerns. Your life begins to resemble the life of the world. And if we give a little thought to this, we can, you know, deliberately find that, step into that. We can bring ourselves into it. We don't have to wait till we're out in nature walking on a path, even as we're walking down the city sidewalk. We can learn to walk in this way. Fully present with what's taking place here. And maybe not really always, at least, trying to rearrange the world to accommodate us. You think there's a flaw in the world, something that needs to be fixed, something that needs to be changed, and so then we want to go out there and straighten that up. But maybe what we think is flawed is only a flaw because maybe it's just interrupting our immediate concern or just our convenience. I just want to be able to walk up this path and not have to duck under that branch every time. Well, what kind of a mind is that now that operates in that way? As opposed to walking up that path, noticing the change of the day, the season of the year. Well, here's the branch. How that has changed. It's a different approach, but there's no particular thing I can point to about this other kind of mind. We have to find this ourselves to realize that there is such a thing. It's not a deliberate mind or a mind that's always looking for its own convenience or a mind that's in a hurry to accomplish something and to get something done. So we get it done, now what? Next thing? And on. Well, a couple of weeks ago, Chris, I don't see her here now today, but she told me that she had gone to a well, I don't know, some kind of convention or something of psychologists. I believe she's a psychologist, and she said at this convention they told this story, which she's heard me tell from time to time, but they changed it somehow, you know, and she was kind of puzzled about that. And she said, where did you learn this story? And I said, well, I heard this from Katagiri Roshi. And she said, it's the story of the little bird in the forest fire, right? You know that one. Most of you, I'm sure, have heard me tell that one. And she told it just as I've always... And she said, and that's where the story ends. I said, yes. So it's the story of the little bird. Just in case you haven't heard it, I'll just repeat it now. But the little bird, this little bird is a forest fire. And this little bird's alarmed. Has to deal with this forest fire. So the bird flies off to a lake 20 miles away, scoops up a drop of water in her beak and flies back to the fire, drops it on the fire, and flies back to the lake to get another drop of water. And little birds are flying back and forth, you know. And, you know, the other animals are just laughing, like, you can't put out that forest fire, you know, what are you doing? Little bird just keeps flying back and forth until she dies. That's pretty much the end of the story. But there's a subtlety in this story that could be missed easily. And when we miss it, then we think, maybe as I probably did maybe the first time I heard it, this is a little disappointing, kind of depressing. I mean, this poor bird, you know. I didn't realize at the time, I don't suppose, I'm not really clear on just my first hearing of it and how I reacted to it, but I'm sure I didn't really appreciate it right away fully, you know, what's in this story. But this story points in a very profound and a subtle way to liberation and freedom and how to live your life completely and fully and with happiness and joy, and in a way that heals the woes of the world. Well, Chris said she had been at this place, and they told the story, but it had a different twist on it. Not a twist. It was, I mean, it was just completely... I mean, this story... this is what she said. Well, so the bird's flying back and forth. And then God... You know, immediately, I said, I knew that this was going to be a different outcome. But God saw this little bird flying back and forth, and God, changed himself into an eagle and flew down, landed on a high tree or whatever. He was looking at this bird flying back and forth and just started laughing at the bird, laughing at the little bird, saying, you can't put out that fire. What are you doing? This is so foolish, you know. But the little bird just kept flying back and forth. And seeing the desire in her heart, you know, that to kind of help heal the wounds of the world here, then God, or the eagle, began to cry. It just kind of touched God's heart to see this, the intensity, you know, that this little bird had. To deal with this. And so God began to cry. And of course, being God, you know, well, this is the rain that falls, you see. And then the rain fell, and then the rain put out the fire. And that's the end of that story. But that's a completely different story. And it completely misses the subtle point. The subtle point being that the little bird didn't put out the fire. Nothing put out this raging fire. We think we have to put out the fire. We think the fire must be put out. When that is in our mind, when we're looking at it in this way, it completely changes the situation. Now immediately we're looking at this whole situation that we're in here dualistically. You're going to go to one side or the other, and of course the side that we pick and the side we want. We want that to win, to be victorious completely and crush and drive out and wipe out, destroy the other side. We don't realize that this way of seeing it, this way of thinking, this acting out of this, is the raging fire in itself. And this is the kind of the approach we take. We can look at it in many ways. Like, for example, take the abortion issue. Two sides here. Are there two sides? Well, maybe not. But we tend to go to two sides. Maybe there's many people indifferent to it. But also maybe there's some people who aren't caught up in this, but who can see the problem. But when we have a situation where we think it's a matter of this side has to completely crush and devour that side, whichever side you want to pick here, this is not a particularly healthy situation. Nor is it healthy if one or the other side actually succeeds, at least for a time, but nothing ever lasts forever. It will go back and forth. But there's some wisdom here that is lost in seeing the picture in this way. In that particular issue, for example, I mean, this is a very serious issue, abortion. Many aspects to it. There isn't any clean answer to it. Why should we presume that there is one and I'll just pick it and drive the other one out? And you got other people looking at it completely differently. You're not going to succeed in doing that. This is a social issue that needs to be worked on and worked on and worked on. And it's a fire that won't go out. And we shouldn't think that the job is to somehow put it out, whichever side we're looking at it from. I can go on and on with examples like this. This is that we act out of our divided mind, out of our ego mind, out of the, we'll take hold of something that this is right, this is good, and this is what it must be. And we create, we stir up the world, we create trouble. We create problems. We muddy the water and we stir up the flames. And we don't realize that we do this. We don't realize how the very thing that we're trying to resolve, whichever side of the issue you're on, the very thing that we try to resolve, in the way that we go about it, we perpetuate the problem. And the water remains muddy. The fire continues to burn. All in our effort to, thinking that somehow we have to put a stop to it, to drive it out. Not recognizing that the water remains muddy. We live in muddy water, in a raging forest fire. Our job is not to put it out or to think that we can put it out or that it needs to be put out, but to realize how within this situation to act and to be and to alleviate suffering and confusion and to not exacerbate this problem or to make it grow. And this can get very serious. Now today, what is going on in the world where we have many people, I think, who I think are kind of looking at the right approach here to see this in the whole, that it isn't a matter of stamping out some particular thing here, some particular evil, but a matter of working with it in a way that maybe over time it can be healed and changed. Or we can have this other approach where we're just going to go in there and snuff out the other. But you can't snuff out the other, and you will make the situation worse. You will enrage the other because you're not going to wipe them all out. This is just how the world operates. What will end up getting wiped out is perhaps all of us together. Because that's what we're doing to ourselves. So when we have a particular small group of people who have an enormous amount of power, and then they're allowed unchecked to just go ahead and to wield this power, but without any wisdom, without any knowledge of how the world actually works, thinking that somehow, and it's just like the person who cut the branch, thinking, yeah, they're probably thinking they're doing a good thing, a favor to everybody by cutting that branch, but missing the subtle reality with which we live and the subtle way with which we can engage ourselves in this world. We may have people thinking, so we can't, it's not a matter of blaming or thinking that they're evil or whatever, but there is ignorance and there is foolishness. There is a lack of wisdom. And I think most people can sense that, can see that, because we all have knowledge of the truth and of reality. But it's easy for us to get caught up in one thing or another and lose sight of that. One of the ways we can easily lose sight of that is just to suddenly amass a lot of power or a lot of wealth. Suddenly you have it right here. And now your judgment, your ability to see, it's probably been impaired. So we have powerful people going around just insulting others, not willing to work with them. We're going to do it like this. We're going to go in here and do it this way. You're not with us. You know, then you're against us. And we're just going to go ahead anyway. This is very, very arrogant, very, very foolish. Other people in the world who are receiving directly the insults, particularly somebody with, say, nuclear weapons, receives these insults and now becomes very bold and belligerent and angry, wanting to strike back. Well, of course. Of course that's going to be a very natural reaction. We shouldn't be at all surprised to see this happening. Very foolish to, why stir that pot in that way? Why is this going to help this situation? To act in this way is to act in kind of the small way, in a divided way, where you're looking at everything as though it were just one particular way, or at least it could be. It's that way or it's this way. And so there's something here that you can grasp, something you can hold, something you can promote and push, or we're left with this other situation where we can't see the clear edges of anything, but we're in this world as a whole. And there's a fire going on here. And how can we deal with it? And we can deal with it not by walling ourselves off, separating ourselves out, having one thing set off against another. This is just simply not the way to work with it, to look at it. We have this very simplistic idea of good and evil. This is the kind of language that we hear being thrown around now today. This side says you are evil, the great Satan. We want to do you in. This, and by the way, it isn't just two sides. But there's another side here that's looking back. No, you're evil, and we got to put you out. This is just plain stupidity and foolishness. But we've allowed the situation, this blindness, this lack of seeing, to fall into the hands of a few people who have enormous power. But what it takes, I think, is the wisdom of people on the whole. If we can look at this and come back to this and have this pointed out to us, to remind ourselves of this subtle reality, this whole fabric that we're all in here, we're not going to get it to go right ever. But we can start to understand the folly of thinking that it's just black and white, that it's just this or that, that it's going to be muddy water, it's going to be murky, and we work with it, we grapple with it, we talk to each other about it, with none of us ever getting the idea that somehow we're so right that we could to wipe out the other. We have to start seeing this, or we're doomed. It isn't good and evil. This is why I teach, you know, there's wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. And it means just that. There's the whole. And this is, we put our eyes on that, and our minds on that, to see everything in the whole. That the person who wants to do you harm or whatever, the way to deal with that isn't to just go after them. That just perpetuates the problem and exacerbates the problem. And neither one of you are going to wipe out the other. We might end up wiping us all out, but we're not going to wipe out the other. Our only hope is to embrace the other, to take the other in, to work with the other, find a way to do it, and just keep coming back to that, to work on it. This is wholesomeness. Look at that in place of goodness, thinking that we're good. Who among us, on either side, there's good and there's confusion. We don't need to start slapping on the labels. But this other side, you know, it's not bad or evil. It's confusion, it's ignorance, it's stupidity. It's just blindness, not looking at the situation we're in and how to deal with it. It's ego, it's caught up with self and other. And that's unwholesomeness, because it's seeing the world in this fractured way and thinking that somehow put this fire out if only our side will just completely wipe out the other. That's unwholesome. That's delusion. And it's only when enough of us start to understand this, to look at our situation, not in terms of good and evil and us against them, and we have to stop this. And start looking at it, whether it's the abortion issue or to look at the whole picture together and to work. And there'll always be differences. That's the muddy water. And to stop being angry and hating the other, no matter what the issue is, we have to stop it. For each one of us within our own heart and mind, we have to see that what this is, this fracturedness, this unwholesomeness, we have to recognize it within ourselves and to stop it and to help other people to see that. And we have to do it relentlessly. But first, we have to recognize this within our own heart and mind. Because given the way the world is now, with all the powerful weapons and the technology that we have, all of that, this cannot go on much longer. We're everywhere. We're overpopulated. We're polluting. We're burning up resources. We're fighting. This cannot go on. And it's like the curve is just getting so steep now. Whether it's through disease or natural disaster, just a collapse of the ecosystem or war or whatever. We have to get a new model in our mind, not that good and evil model, not that dualistic model in our mind. We have to start seeing this differently. And I know that after one of my books came out, I saw some review where this person thought that I was being very foolish, that I was denying that there's good and evil in the world. No, it's not that at all. I can see. I can see the pain, the confusion. It's the tactic, the approach that we'll take to this. Of course, there's what we could call evil. But whatever you call it, the thing not to do with it is to isolate it over there, and then now we've got to get it out. We have to realize that that is in the world, it will remain in the world. Whatever's in this world will remain in this world. We have to learn to deal with it here. It's a different model, a different way of looking at this situation. And this is really becoming, I think, quite critical. Here we stand poised at the edge of I don't know what. But it seems like something's about ready to break here pretty soon. I just felt like I had to say something today about this. But as I said before, too, what I really want to say here, I can't exactly say, because it isn't a particular thing. If it'd be so nice, of course, this is where our minds will go to. This is it. This is what we should hold to. But what I'm saying is that rather than to look to some specific thing and to grasp that, we need to just broaden our vision. and to see it all, to recognize it all, whatever we might call it. Stop thinking of it in terms of good and bad or good and evil. Bring it back just to notice what is wholesome, what isn't wholesome. What is of the whole? What nurtures and helps us all? What divides us and causes us to fight? And to hate and all of that. Well, I just wanted to offer that caution on this glorious spring day here. Well, it's not quite spring, is it? We're still in the throes of winter. But maybe you have some questions or concerns about this issue. You know, like I said, too, I think many people feel we're all just walking on eggshells here or whatever. It's just the whole atmosphere. Think about why this is. It didn't really have to come about. Think about how this whole situation has been deliberately stirred up. Think about that. Think about the kind of mind that is operating to stir it up. What is that? How does that mind viewing the world? I don't mean to single out any particular person here. And think also about what we can do, all of us can do, to back away from this edge. And also, too, like if you identify, you know, a certain group of people or whatever as the enemy, they're causing this trouble. Again, recognizing yourself that's that unwholesome approach once again. We cannot do it. It won't work. If you are on one side or the other of, say, the abortion issue, don't hate the other side. See if you can work with them. Try to understand where they're coming from, to appreciate that, you know, and then work together. It's a murky issue. And it should remain murky. And we should just resign ourselves to that. We got to deal with this murky issue and leave it murky, but let's not become kind of blasé about it. We have to deal with it, but not by trying to wipe out the other. Yeah, Michael.
Are you saying that your story of the bird, the action of the bird is neither will nor natural, neither wholesome nor unwholesome?
Of the little bird?
Uh-huh. And that's kind of, I can look at this and say, well, you know, how stupid, why kill yourself? It's obviously impossible.
Well, see, if you're seeing...
And I can turn it around too and say, gee, you know, you do what you have to do, and you don't attach to the result. Yes, I know the drop of water is not going to extinguish the fire, yet I cannot but think
about it. Well, it's what the bird saw she could do, and so she did that. But if your idea is, I got to put out this fire, well, then yeah, you might as well just get back with the other animals and laugh at any fool that would try to put out that fire, you see. But our job isn't to put out the fire. Stop thinking it in terms of putting out the fire, snuffing out the other. Stop, because that's looking at it dualistically. This is what we need to step away from. And that's why I say, like somebody said, well, I was ignoring that there's evil. No, not at all. I know that there's pain, suffering, confusion, difficulty. It's just that slapping that particular label on and putting it in dualistic terms doesn't help the situation. It perpetuates it, keeps it going. So it's a radically different approach. So it's like the little bird. The little bird was acting, was doing something. But in this world, that remains this muddy water. There is more to this, but that would take us into a much more subtle layer, and maybe I don't want to get into that now. But it's enough, I think, just to see this much. Well, just to give a hint in case for some of you might. With that other subtle layer, you know, we have that expression, in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. Nothing surpasses the boundless mind. So not the mind that's divided, that has boundaries, separation, boundless mind. But in this world of emptiness, and in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water. Here's the muddy water. Now, in seeing that this world is empty, empty of what? Empty of particularness, of self and other and this and that, of unwholesomeness, of division. It looks that way. and to the extent that people are caught up in there, here's our muddy water. But actually the world is emptiness, whether we recognize it or not. No particular thing here, ever. Nevertheless, things are appearing here, and they have to be dealt with. So now let's deal with them. But not with the idea that somehow we're going to escape this muddy water. We don't need to escape the muddy water. All we need to do is to finally, through working in this way, maybe at some point we can finally realize what we really have here. And this is to escape the muddy water without really putting an end to the muddy water. The Buddha said to purify your own mind. May we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. You know, what the lotus has is newly discovered by scientists just recently, that the lotus flower is just the physical structure of the flower is such that it actually repels dirt. It doesn't get dirty. You get dirt on it, the dirt will just eventually leave. It'll get out. You know, the flower cleans itself, in other words. But the ancients knew from way back that the lotus flower was always grows in muddy water, but it's always beautifully clean. Even if it got mud and stuff splashed up on it, after a while it would be clean again. It's like a self-cleaning. And it's at the molecular level that scientists were able to discover this. And so they're trying to get this property into things like paints, and that's like when you paint your house, you have self-cleaning houses, you know. But the ancients realized, they had this. So that became the lotus, then became the symbol for this purity. But it's growing here in this dirty water, this muddy water, and yet it can purify itself, it can clean itself. And that's the image that we have then in Buddhism, and that recognize, the fact that the world is empty means that we don't need to make this water pure. That's not the problem. No, purify your own mind. And now you can live in this muddy water in such a way that is healing and helpful, nurturing, for not just only for yourself, but for others. But we don't need to think that somehow we're going to make this water pure. We won't. That muddiness of the water is our world of this and that. It's a world of delusion. The world of delusion remains. It's another way of looking at this, too, is that we think, we get interested in this practice, in this way, and we want to find enlightenment. And then we think that enlightenment somehow is to destroy delusion or something like that. No, enlightenment goes on in this world of delusion, or this illusory world of this and that. And to the extent that we get taken in by that, there's our delusion. But it's with this delusion now that we can awaken. We can awaken from that. Without the delusion, there's no enlightenment. So it's the same kind of action here. This is a profound and subtle thing to realize and to see. But we can see it. We can learn to see it. We can learn to see in this way. And the best thing to do is to start learning to catch yourself whenever you're reaching for something and you're insisting, you're attaching to an outcome, you're trying to drive it in a particular way. Realize that to be what it is, which is folly. If we could only get our world leaders to see in this way, the world leaders, they need, there was a time when monarchs and that, they would have the, wise men, it would be the fool, right? The fool's always the wise. But they would be there to tell the leader, when you're being foolish, But we don't have that today. Who's President Bush's wisdom teacher here? Was court jester, yeah. Or any world leader today. Well, sure. But people with knowledge, people with expertise in one thing or another. And of course, we need this too. But how about someone with wisdom who can actually see the whole picture and realize what is folly and what isn't? We don't have that today. And why don't we have that today? Well, it's because on the whole, we don't even recognize that there is something like this. And of course, we could sit there and argue about who's really wise anyway. But to the extent that we can be educated in this matter of muddy water, of non-duality, then maybe we can, collectively, we can start to get a sense of what's required here and what's needed. But, well, it's a pretty serious situation. Still, it is a world of emptiness, so don't despair. Anything else? Yes?
You raised the question of what to do or how to act in a world where you see harmful actions and harmful foreign policies and public policies. And the urge is to change it, try to do, act against it because it's wrong, which buys into the duality. So how do you live to promote the wholesomeness without doing that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, there's no pat answer for this, but of course that's what we want. We want, well, I want to know, well, what can I do now? No particular thing. But the most important thing is, and this is the subtle point, but the most important thing is to wake up. And now with an awakened mind, as opposed to a confused mind, we can know what to do. But the situation, it's hard to say, you know, what to do. We can look to, say, someone like Gandhi, you know, for example, who absolutely took the path of nonviolence, and trouble there that would fall apart from time to time when people would laugh, because it's natural for people to get angry. They get, you know, you get kind of bound up in your cause, and when it isn't going so well, pretty soon we're angry. But it's this matter of coming back to that and coming back to that and coming back to that. Now, it doesn't mean that we sit on our hands and not act. No, I don't think so. I think we have to act. But, you know, we're willing to act and get out there. We can see the right and the wrong, and we got to do this. We'll jump into that first. We don't realize that we've started 2 steps down the road, further. You know, we should go back 1 square. Start at the beginning. What is that? Look at your mind and see if you can straighten it out. In the meantime, I would say, sure, go ahead and act. We're acting anyway. So I'm not saying stop and don't act until you wake up. You know, that's worthless, you know, because you are going to be acting. Even if you choose not to act, you're still acting. So acting or not acting is not even an issue. So if you must act, then act. But while you're doing that, watch your mind. See if you can learn this subtle point, and so that in the process of this acting, you can step out of that. And maybe once you become clear on that, maybe now you can help others. But this is a subtle thing, and very easy to lose sight of this. So, but then how to act? I don't know. I mean, if a protest is coming along, well, and you want to join that, well, maybe not. You know. Depends on what's taking place here and how that's all unfolding. Like, for example, I heard somewhere that the vast majority of people in this country, whether conservative, liberal, whatever, the vast majority of people want a clean environment. Don't want pollution, etc., etc. But it's through some kind of activism that works. There's a certain kind of I don't know, like the image of the tree hugger or something like this, or you know what I mean? There's a certain kind of image that people have in their minds about environmentalists. And so a lot of people are kind of turned off by that. And so, but in fact, they actually would go with that if, you know, but they have this image in their mind about who's acting. Well, then I would say that whoever you are and whatever your cause is, why don't you act in a way that isn't offensive? It was like one of the reasons I put a stone here instead of a Buddha statue. Buddha statue would kind of rattle different people in different ways. Some would go for it, some would hate it, you know. All we want is an image here of some kind of stability, steadiness. This is a Buddha, just sitting here quietly with patience, you know. A stone does that quite nicely. But you put a statue there, and right away people, what is that? What, you know? And idol worship, it's a lot of confusion. Just stirring it up. And for why? Why stir it up? So it takes a little bit more thought, perhaps a little bit more patience, to just look at a situation and to just step back from it, from the edge where you're just going to go right into, you know that this is going to cause a clash. And, well, let's think it through a little bit more. maybe you'll find a lot of people who are opposing you on some of these environmental issues would actually join you if you just worked with them a little differently. You know, so this takes a little bit more work, maybe more patience, you know. So I'm not saying not to act or anything like this, but to constantly engage yourself in such a way where you're looking at the wholeness, the whole picture, and what your immediate actions now are involving, you know. Yeah.
Would your comment on the language we sometimes hear from some Christians saying that they hate the sin and love the sinner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great. But what do you mean by sin?
Well, I've heard it in reference to homosexuality.
Well, yeah, sure. I've seen it in reference to. I mean, I've heard that in reference to any number of things.
I'm thinking about it for myself, that I possibly hate the war, but try to love the warmongers.
Yeah, I mean that's good if you can do that. But again, It's pretty hard to when we're dividing the world in any way whatsoever, it's difficult now to do this. Well, like speaking of Christians, well then Christ said to love your enemy, you know, as yourself, or at least certainly to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, how can you do that? I mean, is it possible? Yeah, it is possible, but how do you do it? You don't do it by seeing the other. You don't do it by seeing them as separate from you. To realize that your neighbor, the welfare of your neighbor is your own welfare. The life of your neighbor is your life. It's no separate from your life. To start seeing it in these terms and to stop seeing it in terms of self and other. And this is what we need to do. But when you're still compartmentalizing, well, there's the, you know, I don't hate you, but I hate what you're doing. Well, where's the difference here? And what are you anyway? The other. And we can't really even find the boundaries, not even between the other and the self here. You see, this is the subtlety of the world with which we are living. So I would say, but to the extent that you can do that, I would say, yeah, that's pretty good. You know, it's not necessarily a bad teaching, but it needs more work, a little more, there's more subtlety to it. But for starters, that's not too bad. If you can really do that. But a lot of times, see, if you're still seeing yourself in terms of self, though, it's very easy, once again, to, even though, yeah, I know I'm good, I'm a good person, and I mean well, you know, and so, but actually, we're doing some pretty nasty things. I think that, for example, President Bush, I don't know for sure, but I think that he might have some kind of a messianic notion here that he's going to do some good and really straighten out the world and drive out all of these monsters out of the world. That's a good thought in a way, you know. But it's delusion, of course, and we need to see it that. And what's delusional about it? But he could very well be in his own mind thinking that he's doing good. Just like the person who sawed the branch off the tree. You can't really say that person was malicious or bad or wrong. They could have been, but probably not. Probably thinking they're doing a good thing. But not noticing the subtle world around it and the beauty and the slowing down and everything else that suddenly dropped away with that branch. Not noticing that. Even after it's gone, not really realizing what has happened here. And that's a situation we're with over and over again. So you can't go after the guy who cuts off the branch, and we shouldn't go after anybody else who's thinking out of some kind of confusion. You know, and unfortunately too, the what we need to wake up to is not an easy thing to talk about. You know, what I'm talking about here, if you notice, I'm not really putting anything out there in a way that you can really get hold of. It's a matter of just looking at this situation as a whole and how we engage ourselves in it and how we easily get spun off into one thing or another. That's not easy for us to learn. But we need to learn it, I think, or we're not going to survive. None of us. So, yeah. And then also to hate the sinner, to hate the sin but not the sinner. It's still just putting things into you know, real chunks there, and it doesn't really work so well. And the other thing is too, what is sin anyway? What exactly is sin? See, in Buddhism, we don't have the notion of sin. Sin is what? That you're wrong, that you're born into it, you're misshapen and warped right from the beginning, and you know, what is sin? Where does that come from? That's speculation, that's belief, that's opinion. What's it based on? See, in Buddhism, we don't even pick up stuff like that. But just look at that. We look at everything, and you look at that, and what do you see there? You see confusion. And the problem in Buddhism is not something like sin, where we have to kind of buy into a kind of a whole system of ideas here and thought about how things are, and speculative and all the rest. How are you going to prove it? I mean, what are you looking at? There's confusion there. No, the problem in Buddhism is, well, it's that confusion. It's ignorance, that we ignore what's actually going on here. That's our problem. We're not paying attention. And we're constantly grasping and constantly trying to protect this self, separating it and now feeling threatened and all of this stuff. But that's confusion. That's ignorance. And it's not easy for us to get out of this, and it's not easy to have it pointed out to us what the problem is, because the problem isn't any one particular thing. It just permeates. You know, it's just muddy water that we're in. Still, we can find our way out of this, out of this confusion, one by one. But you got to do it yourself. And I can't do it for you. I can't. You can't do it for anyone else. But we can learn to just look at this and look at this, and to finally become free of this kind of bondage and confusion that we so easily strap ourselves into. I wish it were a subtle point that I could easily point to and say, "Yeah, this is what you need to do." But I can in a way, just, but it isn't a particular. But it's just a learn to observe your own grasping mind, and to realize just what that is and the suffering and the pain that goes with it. Mary, did you have something a minute ago?
Well, I was just thinking, since you recite the Shujin Ling on your body mind, it says in the Shujin Ling, it is only when you either love or hate that the way appears clearly in the sky.
Yeah.
That seems to lay it out really pretty clearly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's only when you neither love nor hate. Now, of course, the next question is, though, but how do you do that? And, yeah.
Love and hate are transitive verbs, so they take objects. Mm-hmm. So it's only when you're pulled one way or the other by an object, you love an object, you hate an object, to see that there is no object, that there is nothing separate, that there's mm-hmm. nothing out there
yeah.
to either love nor hate. That then becomes clear, at least in the moment, what to do.
Yes. And also when the object is no longer seen as out there and separate, the subject is no longer appearing in this picture either. The self, in other words. Yeah. Yeah. That's what, ultimately, yeah, this is what we're talking about. We need to wake up. And we also think that is so hard. It's hard to experience enlightenment. Not really, but we are so indulgent in our confusion, you know, we love to get into it and to wallow in it. But you know, it's so easy just to look out there, grasp that and run from that, but not to look here, you know. So we get caught by that very easily. Anything else there, Mary? Okay, yeah, Scott, you had something.
I have a question about the muddy water. In a sense, all these things that you're talking about, all the things that we do, are attempts to escape from the muddy water mm-hmm. by getting rid of the so-called evil.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we accept the divine self and other and say, I'll just improve myself and somehow get out of the muddy water.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the first story, if I'm hearing it right, all the other animals laughed at the bird for trying to escape the muddy water, and the bird was doing no such thing.
Yeah.
Bird was the only one, not all the animals.
They thought the bird was trying to put out the fire.
Yeah.
And no.
Yet, so we have all these things in the world on which either signs have been hung or we've hung signs on them saying, escape from muddy water here.
Yeah.
And I will make this confession. When I first got interested in Zen, I thought there was a huge flashing sign around and said, here's a place you really escape the muddy water.
Yeah.
You know, tried and true. And it's even a way of hearing in the Four Noble Truths, if that's the case. Then you get here and you look much more closely at the it's not even really just sad. This is where you finally let go of trying to escape from the muddy water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you just say more about that? Because also there's grief that comes up with that. There's it's arguably one of the central misunderstandings.
Yeah, it is.
Of Buddhism.
Yeah. Well, it's a misunderstanding.
It certainly drove me crazy. So
well, it's a central misunderstanding of life and reality. You know, not just Buddhism or what Buddhist teaching is about or what this practice is. But yeah, well, but we say this. I don't know what else I can say about it. I thought you said it quite well there. But I guess I would say we have to recognize the subtlety, you know, with which we grasp and how easily we get caught. And like we talk about how, say, this practice is useless. We don't use it for anything. Like, why do you meditate? I have no reason to meditate. And if I did, there's the confusion now and the muddy water. What kind of a mind is doing that then? It's a grasping mind, a greedy mind. I meditate so that, you know. Well, what about, because what is meditation? Does it necessarily mean coming here and sitting down in a cross-legged posture and all the rest of it? Yeah, that, but also, how about, you know, when you're doing the dishes or talking on the phone? It's a matter of just being present with what is going on. And you're doing that for what? We don't understand. So there's a subtle point there. Where we're constantly reaching, you know. And that reaching, of course, involves things like, yeah, to straighten up this water, to purify that water.
Well, no, we don't. Is that might be the most cherished notion of all. Somehow, some way, if you do everything right, finally, the water will get purified. Finally,
yeah.
We will climb out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would even go so far as to say that in America, as one British humorist once said, in America, Americans think death is optional.
Yeah. Walt Disney did. I know he's.
Pardon me?
Walt Disney did. He's on.
Yeah. There's so much here that perpetuates that myth that the muddy water can somehow be.
Oh yeah, but as human delusion, I mean, we have kind of commercialized it and really have a large portion of our economy driven by it and all of that sort of thing. Yeah, sure. But it's pretty much worldwide, I'd say. Manifests itself in all kinds of ways, you know. But yeah, well, we think there's something to get. The thing that we want most and that we need most, we already have it. It's just a matter of noticing that. And all the other drivenness, you know, can drop away at that point. But we have to really, really slow down. But we can tell people this over and over again. We have the story of Basso, you know, sitting to become a Buddha and this, you know, teacher. Polishing the tile, you know. What are you doing? He said, well, I'm going to make this into a mirror, in case you don't know that story. The teacher is polishing. He says, well, no amount of polishing is going to make that into a mirror. Teacher says, well, no amount of sitting in meditation is going to make you into a Buddha. And so we're told this, and we don't get it. And then at some point we say, oh, I get it. Oh, okay, so no amount of sitting is going to make you enlightened. Okay, I get that. And then we come right back into this, and we sit with, and if you look in the back of your mind, you got some idea about getting somewhere with this. At some point, we have to take this to heart, and to realize what we're doing, because that's that same kind of mind that causes all this other difficulty in the world. What time do we have there? Ooh, okay. I better end it. I'm sorry, but thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.